It really starts with that realization that we start as business leaders, right? We are business leaders first and technology leaders second. It's absolutely critical that we spend the time within our team to understand how do our business users use our technology? How do they function within their day?
Welcome to Technovation. I'm your host, Peter High. My guest today is Ryan Keene. Ryan's the Chief Information Officer of Total Quality Logistics, the second largest freight brokerage firm in North America, with 2023 revenues of roughly $6.7 billion. Of note is the fact that the company has roughly doubled in size since the beginning of the pandemic. Ryan's been in his role for roughly 2.5 years, and I look forward to hearing how he stayed ahead of that growth from a people, process, and technology perspective. Ryan joined TQL after nearly 15 years at Kroger, ending his time there as the Vice President of Technical Strategy and Operations. And now for a word from our partner, ASAP, and the company's founder and chief executive officer, Gustavo Sapoznik, whose mission is to build machine learning products to solve some of the world's largest and most difficult problems. Well, Gustavo, take a moment, if you would, and describe ASAP's business.
We have a very, very simple mission. Our mission is to end bad customer service. It doesn't just mean the relatively miserable experience that we tend to have as consumers with the enterprises. It's more broad than that. The problem of customer experience, more broadly defined, can be really thought as a three-legged stool. One leg of the stool is the enterprise itself. Another leg of the stool is the customer. And the third leg of the stool is the agent that works for the enterprise. So what's remarkable about this problem is that all three legs, I can argue perhaps successfully, are very broken. If you are an enterprise, you truly dislike the idea of how much money you have to spend in this domain. So the economic problem for enterprise and how much OPEX is represent is just staggering. For customers, we're all customers of companies, so we understand the frustration. And agents have one of the highest attrition rates of any job type in the world. All of this to say we have this very simple mission of ending bad customer service for all of those constituencies.
And now on to the interview. Ryan, welcome to Technovation. It's great to speak with you today.
Great. It's great to speak with you as well, Peter. Thank you.
Of course. Well, Ryan, TQL may not be a household name, well known by everyone who's listening or watching this. I wonder if you could take a quick moment and just describe your business a bit more than I just did.
Yeah, as you mentioned, we are one of the largest transportation providers in North America. We're actually, according to Forbes, the 62nd largest privately held company in North America. And for us, the core of our business is centered around domestic truckload. So these are the semis that you'll see moving freight. And we sit between a shipper, somebody that needs to move freight, and a carrier, somebody that can do that for them. And we try to do our best to make sure that we find a great carrier for whatever needs moved. And then over time, it's, you know, while it's centered on domestic truckload, it's expanded to be ocean, air, rail, what's called less than truckload, a lot of different modes in those business needs as our shippers have had new needs. And if you think about the wide range of what that encompasses, it could be anything from bales of hay to literally parts of rockets. It's an exciting industry that we work in. And it, something to keep in mind, it is an extremely competitive and very fragmented industry as well. So for us, it's really critical. And I think this will be a theme as you kind of hear our conversation today, we go through this, is that our premium customer service, that is our differentiator. It's all about how do we provide this high touch service to our customers and our carriers, but we want that tech enabled. So we are always looking for ways to how do we use technology to augment our great associates. And as I said, as we go through today, I think you'll probably hear some of that come out in the answers.
Very interesting. I'm looking forward to hearing those in your answers, Ryan. To the point of a fragmented industry, the remarkable growth that you've had, especially in recent years, has that been due to, in part, to consolidation of that fragmentation under TQL?
Not so much. Our growth has largely been organic. And it's about how do you create, you know, through this customer service, how do you make yourself the obvious choice when a shipper has a need? And it comes through that customer service. It's about, you know, looking at lines of business where we meet the customer where their needs are, and then we rapidly expand into those. So really, it's about that agility as an organization to always be kind of the top of mind for our customers when they have a problem.
Well, talk a bit about your role as Chief Information Officer, Ryan, if you would. What's within your purview?
Yeah, within the purview, it's really all technology delivery for the organization. So within that, you have cybersecurity, infrastructure, software engineering, all of our data engineering, analytics, science, architecture, platform engineering. Recently, we moved our product management team over into our technology team, which has been a great fit. And then finally, we have a team that's really focused in on our ways of working, our agile methodology rollout, product-led rollout, and the like. So sort of, I would say, a bit of a traditional CIO role with a couple additional flavors in there, maybe with cyber as well as the product management pieces.
And what was the logic of that consolidation? I'm on the one hand, as an outsider looking in, I can understand, given the rapid amount of organic growth, having a single leader overseeing all these areas and having them work in concert must have great benefits. But what's the rationale? What has been the rationale for those changes?
Yeah, you really hit the nail on the head. It is about how do we align to have the greatest efficiency and ensure that our technology investments are driving the greatest business value. So we have our product management team out in front, always surveying our customers, our carriers, our associates, and understanding where is that value that we can drive. And then they go through and help do that prioritization in concert with our business partners, and to ensure that our technology teams are heads down, working on the best solutions to ultimately drive the greatest value to the company. And so bringing those together more tightly has really helped, I think, the cohesiveness and the efficiency of the process.
And I know from our past conversations, Ryan, that among the ingredients of staying ahead of that remarkable growth to make sure that the organization can digest it and continue to succeed has been transforming the technology landscape, continuing to modernize it, ensure that it is flexible and nimble. Can you talk a bit about some of the things you've been doing from a technology perspective in order to ensure the organization is well situated for the growth that it's experiencing?
Well, it is a very fun time in technology right now. I think we're seeing this incredible growth that you have AI, but you have everything kind of around it, right? Whether it be compute or new storage or new cloud, there's all these new paradigms out there that we get excited about. And how do I start to employ those to drive transformation and scale within an organization? Ultimately, though, you got to strip all that away and you start with the business need. So when you say, how do you prepare the organization, or how do you get ahead of that growth? It really starts with that realization that we start as business leaders, right? We are business leaders first and technology leaders second. So it's absolutely critical that we spend the time within our team to understand how do our business users use our technology? How do they function within their day? We do that by shadowing a lot. So we'll go out to a desk side and we'll sit with them for hours on end, asking crazy questions, looking to see how they use the technology, understanding their processes better. Because ultimately, that's what we're able to bring back, share with our product teams and our technology teams to make sure that we're focused in on what's going to drive the greatest value. Then we get to apply the fun stuff, right? And so now it's like, okay, well, how do we use a potential new platform, a potential new database to meet this unique need that we're seeing come through a current business challenge or maybe a growth opportunity that happens to be out there? And so we scramble around and we really try to assemble everybody to look at what that landscape is and then solution around that. But ultimately, going back to that clear why of what is the business value I'm trying to drive. Doing that has really started to help us, I think, see around some corners and anticipate future need. And again, we are absolutely leveraging the great inflection point in technology that we're at today and looking for all the opportunities where we can bring that in. Of course, when you do all that, there's a big challenge, and that's change management. That's learning. Like, this is all new technology. It might be all new process. And how do you go about doing that? One of the areas that I'm super proud of our organization is we're investing in our people through a very structured technology L&D program that we bring everybody together about every 6 weeks for a morning. We have two tracks within that. And one is a business skills and a leadership track. And then the other is a technology track. And we'll have 7 or 8 sessions. We'll have outside speakers. We'll have some of our teammates talk about the great work that they're doing. We may have a business leader come in and speak about the state of the business or leadership in general. But ultimately, it's about how do we prepare our technologists for what's to come? Where is the technology that we're going to be employing in the future? And then what are those soft skills to help them best adapt to a very growing and dynamic organization and industry? So long answer, but there's a lot to unpack within how we're preparing ourselves for our future growth.
Yeah, I would like to linger on the people component to this and building the skills of the future. This is the tech track that you've talked about, and the way in which you ensure the organization doesn't rest on the laurels of the skills of yesterday or today even, but rather is building the skills necessary for tomorrow. Can you talk a little bit more about how the curriculum is developed? You talked about, you know, involving the broader business and leaders to educate, and you've talked about how you engage external parties as well. Talk a bit more about the design of the curriculum and the development of an internal to IT L&D program itself.
Yeah, so we actually started with developing an internal to IT L&D team. They work very closely with our corporate learning and development organization, but they are 100% focused within our technology team. The way that we look at curriculum on the technology side, a lot of it starts with our architecture team that covers, you know, enterprise architecture solution and software, data, cyber, and the like. And through them, we can identify what are those new patterns or potentially platforms that we know we're going to be moving towards in the future. And then we look for what is the best way to convey that information back out to our teams. And maybe that's through demos, or maybe that's through having an outside speaker come in from a potential vendor or something like that. And then on the other side, on the business skill side, you know, from a technology effectiveness perspective, you have to be able to always speak in the language that your customer is speaking. And a lot of times where I think technology and technologists have fallen down in the past is we'll go into a discussion and we will talk technology. The reality is you have to understand the recipient and the listener and who you're trying to converse with. What is the language they want to talk? And that's always business language. It's business speak. And so how do we help our technologists grow in their soft skills and their ability to connect better with their partners? Over time, that's going to create greater trust across our organization. And ultimately, I think that's going to lead to greater influence that technology can have in, you know, in more broad decisions within our team.
Yeah, very, very interesting. I want to talk a bit about also the data component, how you're thinking about the governance of, the securing of, but ultimately deriving value from the data that is collected, knowing that there's an ocean of it in an organization like yours. How do you think about that, and how do you formulate data strategy?
Yeah, it really gets back into kind of that original, what is the why, right? When you look at the business challenges that are out there, when you understand those business processes, the flows, kind of where the macroeconomic and macro industry trends are moving, so you can start to position your organization better. And then going back and saying, okay, well, what do we need? And then from a data perspective, at the underlying, you know, foundation of that, what do we have? What do we have that can be the fuel? Ultimately, that gets into, do we have the quality? Do we have the accessibility, the trust of that data that we can start to drive maybe new data models, you know, AI, whether it be machine learning, forecasting, predictive modeling, whatever that happens to be. But it all starts with what is the problem I'm trying to solve? So we really stress the why across our team a lot to make sure that we're not just chasing, you know, shiny objects. At that point, then it gets into, how do I trust the data? How do I know it's timely? How do I know it's accessible? And then start to walk that through more of a data value chain, ultimately to the endpoint of saying, how is this going to be surfaced, whether it be through insights or maybe through an application or through reporting, but ultimately, what is the value that that's going to drive? And then how do we measure if it's effective in doing that? So we have a lot of investment going into our data area to just continue to mature on that journey.
Fascinating to hear the way in which you're thinking about this, and I can certainly see that as critical foundational elements for the continued growth ahead. I know that you also think an awful lot about user experience, and that's part of your responsibilities and something you really are excited to influence. Can you talk a bit about some of the levers that are available to pull to improve user experience?
Yeah, absolutely. A huge one is that shadowing. It's going out and sitting and watching, right? Our product management team does an absolutely fantastic job working directly with the users, getting immediate feedback as we're rolling things out. Of course, you want to have the metrics within there so you understand usage patterns and, you know, where are people clicking, where are people not clicking, and make, you know, adjustments to that. But you also want that feedback. It'd be better if it had this, more of that qualitative. immediate feedback that goes back into product management to help, you know, build out your overall pipeline and backlogs. So that's a huge component of being able to get there out in front of the user and also make sure that they know they're part of the creation. There's so much, as you look at the change management curve, it's so much easier to push through that curve when the user sees their work in what's being delivered. If they see that, oh yeah, that's in there because I had this conversation with whomever, they're more apt to kind of get on board, give it a try, even if it's not perfect, but their patience is up a little bit because they see how they contributed to that. So we really dive into that and try to, you know, bring that forward. We do the exact same thing though for our developers and our software engineers. So how do we create, you know, platforms for them that is extremely easy, but it's driven off their suggestions and their requests. So, you know, when we go to roll out a new development experience, they see that. And once again, they see that's in there because our team really needed this. Yeah, I'm going to go in and use that. And here's two other things that we can work on in the future. So ultimately, if you want the engagement from your associates, whether they be on the your business partners or within technology, they have to be able to relate to that design. They have to be relate to that experience. And that incredible experience is going to create advocates, it's going to create trust, and it's going to create influence.
Very interesting. I want to double click on something you alluded to earlier, which is product management. As you noted, something that's become part of your purview. Product operating model is something that a number of CIOs have begun to integrate into their work and the broader work of their organizations. And I wonder if you could talk a bit about your methods, how you've thought about product management.
Gosh, not to sound like I'm repeating myself, but yeah, it does start with those product managers understanding the business areas that they serve. So we have a lot of product managers that actually have come from areas within our business. So we've brought them over and trained them up as product managers. So they already have some of that knowledge of those processes, of the challenges, of the strategies. Then it becomes, how do we start to sift through and understand the value definition? And that gets into helping them understand, how do you create the business cases? How do you understand what is the potential upside opportunity? And then working back through our agile development teams to ensure that we're building the metrics and to, you know, be able to capture and say, yeah, we're actually achieving that. And you know, here's the value that we see there. That is helping to prioritize our investment from a technology perspective, but also on the backside of that, because we can then quantify and show that we're moving forward materially in a positive way by numbers, you gain, you know, greater advocacy from their business partners. You ultimately want your product manager to feel like they're part of the business team directly. And to do that, then obviously the business team has to be able to see the value in that role. And I think the process that we go through, getting the feedback, getting the ideas, understanding the strategy, developing a quantifiable and prioritized backlog, being able to measure success, and then create the feedback loop ultimately helps them gain that inclusion into the business team.
Really interesting way to also create bridges between you and the rest of the organization and foster greater collaboration as well. I can see that becoming much more tightly linked perhaps than past business models or operating models. You know, I wanted to talk a bit about the interplay between automation and processes within your company's value stream. This is something you and I have spoken about in the past. And you've talked a bit about the development of automation hackathons at TQL as a means of stimulating ideas associated with this. Can you talk a bit about the methods you've used and the value derived from them?
We think about our hackathons in general, and each year we select a different topic. And so we've had automation, we've had AI, and so we go through and we try to pick an exciting topic, but automation was a huge success for us. And it really started in with creating this topic. We know it's something that could be impactful to our teams, or they excite our teams. So if you pick a topic that's not exciting, no one's going to really, you know, get themselves invested in it. So we pick automation, everybody's excited about it. We can also see the business upside, right? We don't want to invest the time and the energy in this if we don't think this could actually come out with a material business impact. And so from that, you know, we really challenge our teams to go create your own self-formed teams. And it's so fun because you'll see teams that are, you have software engineers and infrastructure and data, you'll have product people, you may have business partners that join a team. But they self-form those and they do a whole lot of homework going in and making sure that, you know, they have market fit on whatever they want to try. And then, you know, we actually do the official hackathon where it's a couple of days. It's just heads down work. And at the end of that, they have the opportunity then to present to our senior leadership of here's everything we accomplished. Here's where we think the business challenge is that we're trying to address and why this does address that. And then ultimately, the winner often finds their work on a product roadmap to go in for real. And they also have lunch with our CEO so they can talk more about their ideas as well as, you know, company in general. So great growth opportunity for all the teams involved, but it's a great business opportunity for us because you're just getting these fresh ideas. It's outside thinking often by a team that is comprised of people that don't normally work together on a day in and day out basis.
Very interesting. You know, as you look to the future, I wonder what trends particularly excite you, Ryan. What are some of the things that are making their way onto your roadmap?
I would say that if, you know, I didn't say generative AI, somebody would probably knock on my door and tell me to change my answer. So I will go with the generative AI, but I'm going to go AI in general because, you know, if you think about the decades of AI that nobody seemed to talk about until about a year and a half ago, and all of a sudden AI became this overnight sensation that took, you know, 3 or 4 decades to produce. I look at the opportunities that we have within our industry. And as supply chain went through the COVID period, there was so much disruption. Everything was a challenge. And so there became a lot of fresh investment. There became a lot of fresh ideas. And so now to look and see where, as AI evolves faster, are those applied to supply chain and the opportunities that that's going to create, I think is very exciting. I'm also really, you know, outside of this day to day, I'm also very interested in seeing that kind of that combinatorial impact of AI on some of the big grand challenges that just face society. And I think healthcare being one that I think there's tremendous upside opportunity on how, you know, the use of AI can help to hopefully solve a lot of the challenges that we have, you know, as a nation and a world going forward.
Yeah, so very interesting. General, broader AI as well as generative AI, both very impactful in an organization like yours, no doubt. I also wanted to ask you, Ryan, as you reflect on your career and your pathway to becoming Chief Information Officer, what were some of the difference makers along the way that helped forge the path for you to the heights that you've reached?
Probably the biggest difference maker for me has been I've just had great mentors. Both from in person that, you know, we get to talk to every day, but then I also have, you know, what I call the mentors from afar. Those are the, you know, the books you read and, you know, the podcasts you listen to and the people you'll never meet, but you learn so much from. A lesson that I bring to work every day, and I talk about it openly with our entire organization, came from Alan Mulally, former CEO of Ford. Have a tremendous amount of respect for his leadership. Never met him. You know, so this is through books, through watching videos, but he talks a lot about empathy and humility. And when I look back at sort of, I don't know if it's a secret, but if I look at kind of the keys to some success, it is really embracing the notion that empathy and humility are two of the most important words in all of leadership. And so when you think about empathy first, the reality is I'm never going to understand someone else's experience. But I can have an interest. I can ask questions. I can try really, really hard, right? I want to get as close to as I can to understand what somebody might be going through, because ultimately that helps me understand them. It helps me understand maybe a situation or larger context. And that brings us closer together. And then on the humility side, if we're having that conversation and if I come to it and I say, I have all the answers and you're here just to do whatever I say, I guarantee we're not going to have as successful as a solution as we could if I would have come in and said, I know a little bit, I know you have great experiences, right? I don't have the humility to say, let's bring our ideas together. And every organization is going through some massive transformation. I think if you lead without humility through transformation, ultimately you're not going to succeed to the heights that you could have if you would go in and say, we're all going to be part of this solution. Let's all learn from each other and figure out these new heights that we can reach together. So I think, you know, empathy and humility, they've been very important to me. They're important to my values and how I lead. But then I think about just the business reason, and it gets into that transformation. How do you lead transformation anywhere? You do it by bringing people together, helping them to relate to each other, understand a common vision, and all getting after it as a team. And I think those two words are just so critical in that.
Great, great answers all. I love the notion of empathy and humility and that broader point you raise about mentorship, even at a distance from the reading you do, the podcast you listen to, et cetera. Thank you so much for reflecting on that, Ryan. And thank you for the great conversation across the board. What a fascinating 2.5 year tenure you've had at Total Quality Logistics and the remarkable growth that you've helped help bring about while also ensuring that you are doing your part to ensure that that growth is responsible and the organization can continue on that pathway through the great great innovations and changes and transformation that you're fostering as well. Thank you so much for sharing your insights and thanks for a great conversation, Ryan.
Great. Thank you, Peter. I appreciate the opportunity.